Hello, thank you for making it through to our talk at the last day. I should probably not run that stuff before I give you a disclaimer. So we're going to be talking about improvements in attacking client devices on Wi-Fi networks, so rogue access point or evil AP stuff. This year is the 10-year anniversary of when Karma attacks were first released, and there's a lot of work that needs doing, and that's what this talk is about. Some of you might recognize the logo we put up there. So after Heartbleed, we realized that every tool needs a logo, right? You can't just write code anymore. You have to have a logo. So Facebook writes hack on everything, and they sort of sent this out in an email invite. So I hacked their logo to make a logo for our thing. I thought that was appropriate. But thanks to Facebook for not suing us yet. Okay. So we're going to be talking about Wi-Fi at DEF CON, and we've got live demos, so it's guaranteed to do terrible things at some point. We'd like to not do terrible things to you, so please turn off your Wi-Fi if you don't want to be part of any potential terrible things. If you choose not to turn off your Wi-Fi and you stay in this room, then we take that as consent that you're okay with it. That said, we're not going to be showing people's passwords. We've got demos of our devices and things like that. Standard disclaimer. Hi, I'm Dominic. This is Ian. We work for a small company in South Africa called SensePost, a pen testing firm that's been going for about 14 years. Those are our contact details, just our first names at sensepost.com if you want to get hold of us. We like talking about this, happy to continue the conversation, and then we're also on Twitter with those handles. All right, so the ubiquitous why Wi-Fi or justification for our research slide. I think we all understand that Wi-Fi is pretty valuable. People, when they start hacking, like the first Skiddy project, you go buy yourself a pineapple, you turn it on, and then if you're at DEF CON, you get owned. I don't know if you guys saw the... So it's pretty fascinating. We were worried that the VOMs in that stuff might, because of some commonality, exist in ours. Thankfully, it doesn't. But we suspect we spotted it every now and again, just massive amounts of shellcode start flying through the sky. So whoever that is, nicely done. But I think, so Wi-Fi gives you pretty cool stuff. We know that these things are ubiquitous, they're sitting in our pockets, we've all got them on us, and they're all connected to cloud services with tons of valuable information, be it your corporate information or your personal information. So we want to hack the Wi-Fis. They're everywhere and they give us lots of useful stuff. And the promise of hacking Wi-Fi is that you get creds from the sky, manna from heaven. There's vulnerabilities that exist at every layer. We can own Wi-Fi devices at sort of almost every layer of the OSI model. We should have creds falling from the sky. So you can spoof devices into connecting to your network with rogue AP attacks. If there's a secure network that you can try and crack those creds, you know, WPA handshake cracking or EAP cracking, and then you get corporate creds. Once they're on the network, you can man in the middle of them and get passwords, like Doug Song released his stuff in 2000. Robert Graham released his hamster and ferret stuff in, I think, 2007. We had FireSheep in 2010. You know, there's lots of tools released to give you passwords once people have connected. And then we've got stuff to try and like mess with protection. So we can get around SSL using SSL strip and like Moxie's tools. So technically, at every layer, we've got these vulnerabilities. Why can't we just walk around with passwords filling up a database somewhere? The reality is, these days is kind of far from that. There's no manna falling from heaven. You can run this stuff and you'll get maybe the odd noob who's still checking mail over POP without certificate validation. You really don't get a bunch of credentials flying out of the sky. And to try and get a lot of credentials, you have to put a lot of work in. So if you look at Karma attacks, which we're going to look at a bit, those things don't work as well as they used to, and we'll get into that 10-year anniversary. With things like cracking WPA handshakes and cracking EAP networks, those things haven't kept up to date with our ability to crack stuff and the speed with which we can do that. If you look at the man in the middle stuff, yeah, Doug Song released DSniff in 2000, and if you want to capture MSN credentials going over MSN Messenger, then those things are great. But nobody uses MSN Messenger anymore. And then things like HSTS and certificate pinning have come along and messed with our ability to man in the middle as well. So we wanted to fix that. So we're releasing a set of tools today. We're calling the Manna Toolkit. We're calling it Manna because of the Manna from Heaven thing. And we were trying to figure out what a decent backronym would be. So something that made that make sense. And we thought of something lame, like Man in the Middle and Network Attack Toolkit. And we thought, okay, that's possible, we'll go with it. But then somebody yesterday suggested we call it Many Are Now Active, which we thought was pretty cool. Blaine, I don't know if you're here. So we decided we're going to call it Many Are Now Active. Okay, so before we look at Comma Attacks, there's just a targeted primer about Wi-Fi. So first off, we're talking Wi-Fi. We're not talking 3G, GSM, Bluetooth, NFC, anything like that. It's 802.11 A, B, G, N, AC stuff. In Wi-Fi, you've got three types of packets. You've got management data and control packets. So control packets are the kinds of things that prevent RF collisions and allow lots of devices to talk RF at the same time and get decent throughputs. Data packets are the stuff that carries the data you're sending over the network. Management packets are the ones we're interested in. And in particular, there's three sets of packets, probe requests, probe responses, and beacons. So when your device looks for a network, when you open up your phone and you look at available Wi-Fi networks or do it on your laptop, this is what happens. Your device sends out a broadcast probe request, and then all of the access points nearby say, hey, I'm this network and I'm available. And that's a probe response coming back. Now, when you connect to a network, this happens. Well, something slightly more complicated than this, but this is the simplified version. You send a directed probe request, which is different from a broadcast probe request, in that you're looking for that specific network, and then it'll respond to that directed probe request, and you get an association. So if you've played with the AirCrack suite, and you've run fake off with Air Replay, that's what this is. When you get that association ID, it's reached the end of this process. So current Comma attacks, the stuff released by Dino and Sean in 2004, they target this aspect of the association. So if something tries to associate to a network with a directed probe, they'll respond and you associate. But they don't target this part of the whole thing. And what ends up happening is if you look at, I'm jumping ahead a little. Anyway, so if you look at problems that happen, if you run Comma these days, it doesn't work as well. Because, so if you take like a standard Android device, this is a Nexus running the latest one, it'll show you a list of networks that are available, but it's not necessarily directed probing for those networks. So Comma won't know to respond to that stuff. So if you've got a home network saved there, you can click on it, but it'll say, well, your home network's not here, so I'm not gonna try and associate and send that off. So we need to fool those devices into thinking that that network is here. So I'm just gonna jump back a little. So back in South Africa, as kids, we play a game in the pool we called Marco Polo. So we've asked some people at the conference if they've ever heard of Marco Polo, and they say they have, not the Explorer, the game. So I apologize if this is a localized reference, but the way the game works is some kid closes his eyes, and he's it, and he shouts out Marco, and then everybody nearby shouts out Polo, and he has to try and catch them. So he has to acoustically locate them. So this works well for Wi-Fi. So imagine that your client device, when it sends out a broadcast probe, is shouting Marco, and all of the access points responding are shouting Polo with their network name. So that's what Comma relies on is the fact that we can't tell the difference between one person saying Polo home network and another person saying Polo home network. And that's built into the way Wi-Fi works. It's your corporate networks. You're going to have hundreds of APs spread across your campus. You need to be able to have lots of BSS IDs advertising the same ESS ID so that you can roam around and connect to lots of different things. And the places where authentication happens is after association. So that's where you do your EAP stuff, where you do your WPA stuff. So before then, it's completely unauthenticated. You can spoof it, and nothing knows is any the wiser. The other aspect that makes Comma work is that devices have preferred network lists on them. So when you connect to a network and you choose save that network or remember it, then that gets stored as a preferred network. And one of the problems that devices have is that they probe out for these networks even when they shouldn't. They should just be sending out a broadcast request and looking for the networks nearby. But for a variety of different reasons on different devices, they will send directed probe requests saying, hey, home network, are you here? Hey, home network, are you here? Like, it's just shouting out Marco. And so the modern implementations of Comma these days, so the guy on your right is Robin Wood, Digi Ninja. He wrote the first patches for Comma for Host APD, which is the open source access point software. And that's the stuff that's used on the Pineapple, although they released a new version of the Pineapple stuff yesterday, so it's slightly changed now. And the guy on the right is, I can never pronounce his surname, Thomas Dotrep. I'm sorry if he's here and I'm butchering it. He's the guy that wrote the aircrack suite, and the Airbase NG tool implements Karma in software mode.
Right, hi everyone. As Dominic said, my name's Ian de Villiers. Believe it or not, this little note is actually stuck up on my wall at the office because I really battled with host APD. It seems as if the developers there have followed that old thing about not commenting the code because if it was difficult to write, it should be difficult to read. I've also got to say it's a bit disappointing. I'm doing my first presentation at DEF CON and I'm forced to use Windows because when we presented yesterday, Linux just didn't want to work with the projectors and stuff. So I thought I'd take I'd be safe, but anyway. But in any case, the big thing, as Dominic pointed out, in order to sort of successfully start getting devices to associate with our rogue access points, our access point is going to have to respond both to directed probe requests and as well as broadcasts. So literally what we did is we did quite a lot of work on the actual host APD code. And we added components where it's literally just a bunch of hashes and stuff, where hash tables, where we'd store lists of networks that devices had probed for on a per device view. So if Dominic's phone is probed for three networks, we'd store that, and then later on we'd respond for broadcasts with that. And this literally would mean that devices would potentially start noticing that networks were open and would start connecting to them. So to give you an idea over here, I've just got a display over here. This one. One thing, we are going to fire this up now, as Dominic said right at the beginning with a disclaimer. So if you want to, if you've got your Wi-Fi on, you'd probably see that networks that you've associated with previously will probably start becoming available as I go through the talk over here. In any case, on the screen, we've got just a screencast of an Android device. We can see there are a couple of networks it's connected to previously. So SensePost, Mana, et cetera, they all stored. Flamingo Rooms is currently available over there. And then literally we're going to fire up Mana, and on the left-hand screen, we're going to fire it up. You're going to see a whole bunch of output from it, and that's literally where it's storing direct probe requests for specific devices. And when we come along over here, our previously saved network has now obviously gone along. It's now available and it's attempting to connect to the thing, and we can carry on and it's actually connected. So this has followed the sort of same logic as normal. I mean, in terms of it's followed the new logic we've implemented, and that being that we've stored the direct probe request, and then we respond to the broadcast, hello, we're here, and the device is actually going to connect. If we skip further and we just delete that network and we create a new one, then you'll see more how the original Karma attacks worked. So we delete that and we're going to create a network, and then it's going to say, hello, are you there? So we're going to call the network Mana SensePost. We haven't connected it to before, and we're going to connect almost immediately. So I mean, it just makes it very, very, very easy. There we go. And so we connected.
Right. Sorry, I'm laughing at some of the messages some of you are choosing to send us in your network names. Thank you. All right, now the implication there is that Karma starts working much better than it used to. We're now responding to those broadcast requests based on the view of the P&L that we can build up for your device. So if you've got your Wi-Fi on now, we're not running anything malicious other than just sending out the Karma stuff. It's pretty busy at the moment, but you should see some networks specific to your device showing up. Now, one of our colleagues is sitting down in the front here, Glenn. He presented in this track yesterday around this time on practical aerial hacking and surveillance, and a toolkit that he built called Snoopy. And what Snoopy does is it looks at these probe requests that you're sending out, and it builds up a location history of where you've been. So based on your network name, if that's unique and it's been war-driven in the Wiggle database, you can find out where you are. So stuff like Snoopy and creepy-ass retailers using this to track people around and other things have led to a reduction in the number of probes, directed probes, that these devices send out. Because technically, these devices don't need to send a directed probe out other than when it's actually associating to the network. So in the case of iOS, the number of probes it sends out for open networks has been dramatically reduced. And even the number of probes it sends out for hidden networks has been reduced, which I'll come back to in a moment. And in the case of Android devices, they've actually pushed a patch to WPA supplicant, which is the thing which associates to networks, to limit the number of probes that get sent out. That'll get built into Android at some point in the future. So we expect to see even fewer probes coming down the line. So while I was trying to figure out why iOS devices weren't probing for hidden networks, because that's weird, sorry. So a hidden network, it's not broadcast on the SSID. If you send out, I mean on beacons, if you send out a broadcast probe request, it won't respond saying, hi, I'm this network. You have to know the network name and do a directed probe for that network and it'll respond. So what that means is if you've got any hidden networks in your P&L on your devices, then basically your device runs around going, hey, network, are you there? Hey, network, are you there? Hey, network, are you there? So how had Apple figured out to not do that? Like, it's impossible. And I spent a bunch of time building Faraday cages trying to see if maybe they were using location history and then realizing that I don't know maths and can't build a Faraday cage to save my life, and tinfoil works much better. And we eventually figured out that what Apple does is if there's at least one hidden network nearby, then it'll probe for its hidden networks. But if there are no hidden networks nearby, then it won't probe for hidden networks. So easy win if you want using stuff like Snoopy or you're trying to look for probes or you want to make your karma attacks work better, you must have a hidden network nearby.
Right, so what we did then is we thought about this because there are a couple of things one could do. One could either run a hidden network or we actually also thought about broadcasting hidden network frames alongside the beacon and so on and so forth. That's not implemented yet. Or alternatively, deauthing users and having them sort of rescan, which could potentially be problematic. It's really easy, but problematic from other aspects. But eventually what we thought was because different devices react in different ways, and a large number of people these days carry more than one Wi-Fi device around with them, which would probably have different levels of stealthiness, if I can put it that way. What we thought is we'd actually go along and implement something else. So if you remember earlier when I was talking about Karma with the per network, per device view of networks that it's actually probed for, we decided, okay, well, actually, let's skip this. We're going to actually, if anybody is out there, we're going to go through every network that we've actually collected from any device, and we're going to broadcast it. And it actually makes our Karma attack significantly better. So if I skip back to the videos, and I go to Karma Loud, it's basically a configuration setting. It's not enabled by default because it's really noisy. And we start running the actual Karma engine. What we're going to see is on our right-hand side, we've got our Android application. There's only one open network. But as Karma starts picking up more and more networks from other devices nearby, that list is going to grow substantially. I mean, there all of a sudden you start seeing a whole herd of them. And unfortunately, the tablet I was screencasting this from is a bit longer than my screen. But there are a lot of them, and they just sort of carry on coming up and so on and so forth. And it really improves the success of our Karma attacks.
Yeah, so I'm running that at the moment. If you're looking at your Wi-Fi device, you'll see that. But the problem is it ends up trying to generate more packets than this card can, or frames than this card can send out in a reasonable time frame when there's lots of you.
Yeah, so it might work for a bit, and then it'll probably fall over and start working again. But anyway, it's working.
Okay, so up to now, what we did is we fixed Karma. Karma's 10 years old. It wasn't working so well. It now works much better. We field tested this. We're prepared to stand by that. We're releasing this tool at the end of the talk. You can take it and have new Karma attacks that work much better. But then we wanted to... thanks. But in a fine tradition of overpromising and under-delivering, we thought, what else can we put in our DEF CON abstract that'll make it look cool? So we thought, well, let's make ridiculous claims about secure networks and then see if we can live up to them. So Karma attacks work only on open networks. You need the network to be open. Secure networks, so that's WPA networks or pre-shared key networks or stuff like 802.1x, are juicy targets. They, on the one hand, provide you credentials, and on the other hand, if you can actually get them to connect to you, you get man-in-the-middle, the benefits of man-in-the-middling someone. So we spent some time working on extending that. And Ian just gave me a meaningful look, which makes me think that, there we go. The meaningful look meant I forgot something. So when you have a secured network in your P&L list, the different devices behave in different ways. So let's say an Android device probes out for a hidden, not a hidden network, a secured network. Right now, current versions of Karma and Karma running in open mode only, our version, will send a response. But the devices match the network based on the security settings and the name. So they're not going to auto-associate to those networks. They see it as a different network. So what that means is if we want devices to automatically connect, so when they're in people's pockets, we want them to automatically connect to us. We don't want them to have to click on the network to just connect. That's not going to happen. And even if they do click on the network to connect, different devices give you funny warnings. So like on an Apple, on an OSX device, it'll tell you, this used to be a WPA network and now it's open. That's weird. Are you sure you want to continue? Android shows it as completely different networks and things like that. So we spent some time thinking about how to deal with that.
Right, so one of the things I came up with was, we decided if there's no certificate validation on a device, then it actually could theoretically be quite easy to get them to actually connect and look at cracking things. Now, the big thing is previously people have relied on pre-Radius written by Joshua Wright and Brad Antonovich. Hope I got that right. But what we've done is we've actually ported some patches by Brad into host APD, so we've now got our own Radius server, and so it's sort of all incorporated and so a little bit easier. So, nice. Sorry, we're rather tethered over here, but anyway. But in any case, if we're looking at WPA2, et cetera, we've only got to capture the first two parts of the authentication and pass them off to some other cracking tool. And then what we thought we'd do is we'd actually look at automatically crack and add EAP credentials into our host APD config. So the reason for that is, just as Dominic pointed out, is very much, firstly, we've got a Radius server built into the thing, point number one. Point number two is also that you're talking normally about slightly more high-value credentials. It's not someone's WPA2 personal at home, et cetera, it's normally going to be a corporate or something similar. Plus, you've got the benefit of actually being able to man in middle that specific device. So it makes it really, really, really juicy. So if we have a look at this, I'm going to skip through to a video over here again. And now there's a bunch of stuff happening. I've got two windows open over here. Just to explain quickly, the bottom left-hand one, and unfortunately the screen's a bit compressed, so I hope it's going to be clear enough, is where I'm going to tail our EAP users file, so we can see when users get added. The top left is the output from host APD. I'm going to stop there a bit later as the crack and add process actually works. And on the right-hand side, we've got an Android device with a secure network configured. Now, if we actually skip through this, have a look at the network config, it's MSChat, identity is user, password, et cetera, and we'll skip on ahead a bit, and now we tail the users file. It's basically pretty much the default one. I've got nothing past the final entries in that. And I just want to keep an eye on the time here because it's... So literally, I've started it up now and we'll see our device is almost immediately going to connect about now. It's already come through. Sorry, I actually missed it. So if we have a look on the top left, we've got output from crack APD, which sort of says credentials cracked, user, peep, TTLS, password, and we've got a new entry in our EAP users file. And if we let it carry on, you'll see it's going to connect pretty much now. There we go, obtaining IP address, and it's now connected. Now how it all works currently is literally from host APD is I just write create a FIFO when the application starts, and I write from there. But the cracking is actually taking place using generic tools. In my case, I'm using Asleep with the standard Kali Linux RockYou word list. And the script itself is implemented in Python. It just makes it easier if people want to go along and start looking at cloud-based cracking providers or something like that. Just make it a bit easier to extend that. You have to say, though, that depending on the complexity of the password, it might not crack as fast as this one. This one's user was password, so it would naturally crack virtually immediately. But it could take, if it's crackable, it could even take a significant amount of time.
So the implication there is twofold. The one is we took FreeRadius WPE, which was released in 2008 and hasn't really been updated much since, and that's now integrated within this toolkit. So you don't have to run a separate tool That stuff will all work for you. And then the other thing we did is it'll auto crack an ad, as Ian pointed out, so that you can hopefully get sod man and the middling people. All right, so up to now, what we did is we focused on improving Karma attacks. The broadcast stuff, trying to deal with things like loud mode, trying to deal with secure networks. But to really make this stuff count, like if we just left it there, it's kind of a bit technical. It doesn't fulfill the promise of creds falling from the sky, manna from heaven. So we realized we needed to look at the man in the middle side. Now here we've relied a lot more on lots of other people's tools. We've built some of our own. But the problem is there's so many different tools out there, you're never really sure which are the ones that are going to work best for you. And with the current configuration and the way devices work and the new stuff that's coming out, like HSTS and certificate pinning, some of that stuff just doesn't work. I mentioned it in the beginning that it doesn't work as well. So we spent some time trying to put together configurations that would give us really nice results when man in the middling and give us the credentials from the sky. So up to now, we're just getting the EAP credentials. What else can we get? So the first thing we used is a tool by a guy named Daniel Rothlisberger. Once again, I'm sorry if I'm messing it. That's why there's a hamburger there, so I could remember his name. So this is a tool called SSL Split. If you want to man-in-the-middle SSL connections, I highly recommend this tool. It's scalable. It can do non-HTTP protocols. It writes the output out into useful formats. It's a really cool tool. The Mana Toolkit uses this to do a lot of heavy lifting. But we didn't make any changes to it. The next thing we looked at was different configurations for different situations. So most people, when they're man in the middling, will rely on NATing or some kind of upstream connection that they're literally sitting in the middle of. But it's really useful to be able to do this stuff in places where people have left their Wi-Fi on, but there isn't necessarily an upstream connection. Like if you're a visitor in a foreign land and you don't have a data bundle. Or on an airplane, or down a mine, something like that. Lots of people leave their Wi-Fi on in airplanes when they're not supposed to. So a lot of devices will do these checks to check if they're online or if there's a captive portal. Apple devices, and more recently Android devices, try and get tricksy. So Google will make a request to something called generate 204 and expects a HTTP 204 response back. So to make it think it's online, you have to try and respond to these different things. Apple gets particularly tricky. They make a random request to a random URL on one of 200 different hosts, which it chooses randomly, with two different user agents, just to check that it isn't being blocked based on user agents. So we built a bunch of stuff that deals with all of this, Apache vHost that's built into the Mana toolkit that'll help you deal with it. And the reason it's interesting is because of stuff I'm going to talk about just now, where you can push malicious certificates to devices to make your man-in-the-middle work much better. So there's an option with this stuff in the toolkit to have that happen as it connects to the network. So one of the ways we can get creds, one of the easy ways, is to have a malicious captive portal. We'll show you the demo. You know, it's a bit lame. It sort of says log in with your Google creds, and hopefully somebody will do that. But all of you guys would be far too smart for that, I'm sure. But it also gives us the ability in no upstream mode to start getting some credentials from people, and it gives us a place that we can push out our malicious certificates, which I'll show in a bit. So if you're going to be man-in-the-middling stuff on these devices, it's really useful if there's a certificate in their root store that you have the private key for. But we're not law enforcement or, you know, the government of Tunisia, so we don't get to do that to our population. We have to try and convince people to put those certificates on there. And that's supposedly quite difficult, right? Well, actually, it's ridiculously easy. And I think people should maybe be taken to task for how easy it is. If you send an Android or an iOS device a .cer file, C-E-R, it doesn't even have to have the right MIME type, then they will helpfully offer to add that to their root CA store, like over HTTP. So if they're doing their captive portal network request and they receive a .cer instead of an HTML file, they'll be like, hey, you're sending me a certificate. Why don't I add that to my root CA store? You need to type in your password, granted, so there isn't an element of them warning you. But it just feels like that should be a harder thing to do. Like somebody in corporate IT should have to go and do that. Or you need to like work for it. Not you can just send it. And in Apple's case, you can even push malicious iOS configs over there. In the exact same way. Once again, you have to type in their four-digit password. But some users are going to fall for that. And given that it gives us a root CA on their device, it's totally worth it. The next thing is HSTS. So HSTS stands for HTTP Strict Transport security. Three acronyms I can remember, four blows my brain. So HSTS is something to defeat tools like SSL Strip. And what SSL Strip relies on is that if you type in something like google.com, you know, you didn't type in https://google.com because you're my mother. She's a very smart lady, but she's not, you know, not going to type that stuff in. So you're going to hit the page on HTTP, at which point you'll get a redirect to HTTPS. So SSL Strip, stuff Moxie Marlinspike released previously, it'll just prevent that redirect and serve things over HTTP and rewrite links to HTTP. With HSTS, a site can configure that, will basically send a directive to your browser to say, always access me via SSL. So even if you type in accounts.google.com or http://accounts.google.com, your browser will still go to accounts.google over SSL without ever hitting plain clear text HTTP. So things like SSL Strip don't get an opportunity to work there, and it gets very difficult to man in the middle. But there was this guy, Leonardo NVE, who presented at Black Hat Asia this year, who had this awesome idea for getting around HSTS. And it works really well, so we implemented it. And it's one of the things we're releasing in MANA Toolkit. Well, it's his work, all credit goes to him. We just made some changes to make it work slightly better. So I'm gonna show you some demos of how those things fit together. Okay, so it's the same setup as up to now. We've got the tablet on the right, and we've got Chrome open, and we're running in no upstream mode. So if you try go to a page that we haven't faked, then it's going to take you to our captive portal. And we're going to go to foo.com, and it takes us to our fancy captive portal. And you'll notice it asks you to log in, and it's got a drop-down for different services like Google or Facebook, in the hopes that somebody's going to be a dork and just type their details for one of those things in. Creds from the sky. Okay, so we're going to type some creds in there. We've created a bunch of accounts for the purpose of these demos. Somebody types it in. It's going to send it as a GET request over plain HTTP. We can just pull that from our Apache logs, which is where we're serving all of that. So if we look in our Apache logs, there it is, his username and his password on the right-hand side. Okay, so that's really straightforward. But now, if we wanted to actually get his Google creds when he went to Google, what we can do is implement this HSTS bypass. So you'll notice we've gone to google.com, but it's redirected us to quadw.google.com. Now, quadw.google.com is not a real domain. And because it's not a real domain, there's no HSTS policy for it saved in your browser. So this requires two things. The one is it requires a DNS proxy, which Leonardo wrote, that will do this exchange. So you're trying to go to www.google.com, actually go to four W's, but return the proper result. And a modified version of Moxie's SSL strip that, once again, Leonardo wrote, that will serve the right content, strip out HTTPS URLs. In this instance, we're actually not using that. Because this is in no upstream mode, we can control the full interaction, so we can create a vhost called quadw.google.com. And later on, we'll show you it running a NAT with that stuff happening live. Okay, so now we've rewritten the link so that if you click sign in on the right, which would normally redirect you to accounts.google.com, it once again keeps us on the quadw.google.com domain. And with the live NAT stuff, it would redirect you to accounts.google.com.x. And now we type in the same credentials. We've edited it to be a GET request. It's in clear text, and it's going to show up in our Apache logs just the same as the other one. Okay, but then the last thing is this malicious certificate sideloading. Okay, there's the username and password showing up in the GET request. Okay, so that's the second way we can get, well, the third way we can get creds from the sky easily. So lastly, we're now going to try the certificate sideloading. We're going to go back to foo.com, a site that doesn't exist, with our portal. And you'll notice it's got this helpful let us auto-configure the network for you. 10 minutes, thanks. If you click on that, it pushes that sir file to you, and Chrome helpfully pops up a prompt saying, well, what do you want to call this new root CA we're going to helpfully add for you? You can type in anything, and then you click OK, and you've got a root CA sitting on your device. Like, it shouldn't be that easy. So if the user makes a mistake of believing us, clicking on that, and clicking OK, and then it kind of comes down to how good your social engineering is, I guess, there. What it does, to their credit, do is in the top left-hand corner, you'll see a warning pops up, which says, warning, this network might be monitored by a third party. because our root CA is not signed. So those are three ways in which we can improve the state of man in the middling after we've gotten things connecting to our device.
Right, great. So those who were in Glenn Wilkinson's talk yesterday about aerial surveillance, et cetera, would have heard a reference to FireLAM. But in any case, FireSheep no longer works, et cetera, et cetera. So Glenn, quite a while ago, wrote a tool called FireLAM, which is basically a Python script with SCAPI, so it sort of can capture cookie information that parses out cookies made by request, made from specific machines, and it literally create new Firefox profiles with the cookie stores for every device that's actually gone through, or all the traffic that's been sniffed or loaded from a packet capture file. We use a modified one in terms of that, in terms of manner, because obviously a large chunk of our information is actually still traversing the network encrypted, albeit through SSL split, et cetera, et cetera. So obviously FireLAM isn't going to work, and so we just have quite a lot of modifications to actually parse, not a lot of modifications, but just to parse the cookie information out of the SSL split logs. And this basically gives us a, because now obviously we've spoken about credentials, we can get that using all of these specific things. But in terms of that, session IDs and cookies, et cetera, are also some form of access token, and they're obviously very important. So we've implemented FireLAM inside the MANA toolkit as well, and let's give you a demo of that. So it's quite a long demo, so I'm probably going to skip ahead a little bit with this one at some places. But in any case, if we go through here, this one has got a bad certificate loaded, it's SSL stripped, we're manning in the middle all over the place. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to go to accounts.com. This is the real google.com, accounts.google.com. We're just MITMing it at this specific point. And we've signed on, and we can see that it says Andrew Hacker, that's the profile page, et cetera, et cetera. And then that's not enough, so we'll skip forward and we'll sign on to Facebook as well, ahacker1337. What's nice to note over here is you'll see we've actually, because Facebook also implements HSTS, so we've got the same trick implemented. We're actually signing on to quadw.facebook.com as ahacker, which is awesome. And then we can sign on using a password. And I'm going to skip ahead here a bit. I believe he creates a post to
his
various
mother.
Things. Oh, no. Hello, Mom. What is your maiden's name? And then he sends a mail, et cetera, et cetera. All of this information is being captured at some specific point. But the big thing over here is if I sign on to my Kali Linux, which is doing all of this work, and in this case, I'm now going to be running FireLAM to actually have a look at this. And I'm going to hit space here. You see what it's gone and done is it's created a bunch of output directories. Now, all of those output directories, what Glenn implemented, are actual Firefox profiles. So in my case, I'm interested in output directory number 6. So I can actually go along and just enter 6 at this point, and it's going to fire up Firefox using that actual profile, which means I'll have access to all those cookies. I'll have a links to a whole bunch of pages he's actually recently visited. So let's click on accounts.google.com. We're using the same cookie he was using a couple of minutes ago, so we now actually have signed on to it as, well, not signed on, we're impersonating him on accounts.google.com as Andrew Hacker. And now we can sit and go back a bit, and we'll go on to, in this case, it's strange. I mean, the host name is actually pixel.facebook.com and not tripw. But if we click on that, we get the same effect.
Any moment
somewhere.
Now.
Any moment. There we go. So we've actually authenticated, well, impersonating him on Facebook at this point. Now we made a couple of changes to FireLAM once again in the meantime, because we're pulling out a whole bunch of creds, which obviously aren't cookies, et cetera, but they're stored all over the place in these SSL split files, which hasn't all been completed by the time we recorded this demo. So I'm just going to skip forward a little bit over here. Here, for example, is basic auth for, that's not that one. Somewhere over here we've got basic auth for mail.
Uh-oh.
I think that is time. But in any case, all even the clear text mail, everything is stored in there. So that is all over there.
So I'm sure many of you have seen this before. These two fine gentlemen, and I use that term very loosely, have never spoken at DEF CON before. So what does that mean they do? There you go, that's right, they dream.
Thank you very much.
I gotta get my shot of water. So thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations for our first timers. And everyone, give them a huge, huge round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
All right, feel free to go about your business. Hey, they're not done yet. Feel free to go about your business.
Thank you.
Okay, so somebody was shouting, where can we get it? We haven't posted the code up there yet. We just need to switch it over to the public repositories, but they'll all be there. So you can see there's a ton of tools that we messed with. So Manna is the main thing that ties it all together. The others are tools that we've written or contributed to, made changes. And then other tools like SSL Split, we're using that vanilla. There's just configurations in Manna. So the net result of all of this stuff is that we think, and we run it, it works, we get creds falling from the sky. There's still places in which people are protected, so this isn't something that's necessarily inherent. You can still run secure, but there's lots of ways in which people can make mistakes. And even though we're supposedly savvy to this, we keep catching ourselves. We forget to turn off our Wi-Fi, suddenly see your home network show up, next thing you see some of your creds coming. It can be a real pain. So if the stuff's working against us, it works even better against potential victims. So that's us. Thank you very much for your time and patience. That's where you can get the info.
Thank you very much.